Hi, friends, and welcome to All Things Relatable, a place where stories are shared. It's hard to put a value on a story because the lasting effects it can have are often priceless. An individual's story has the potential to impact our lives in tremendous ways. My hope for you in joining me today is that this episode resonates with you and that you leave enlightened, ignited, and inspired, because it only takes one moment to spark a change and leave an everlasting effect. Hey, friends, I'm so excited to dive into this next conversation with Sierra Sophia Mercier. Sierra is the author of the book, How to Attract Your Cosmic Love Partner. Her book includes a five-step guided workbook to help you become the most loving version of yourself so that you can then attract the most loving relationships. Sierra has walked this path, and so her book is a compilation of the wisdom and lessons that she learned along the way. Sierra's mission is to help illuminate the darkness in the world by helping each person tune back into their truest, most loving selves. Hey, Sierra, I'm so happy to have you on today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yay, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Candace.
Okay, so I can't wait to get into your story. So I think your love story with your husband is movie worthy. And I actually can't even believe how it unfolded. It's pretty special. But before we get into all of that, let's go way back. So what was the experience like growing up for you in your romantic relationships and dating?
Yeah, heavy. So I feel like I was always kind of young for my age. I was ahead of my times in some ways, but in other ways, I was quite naive and sheltered and young. And so I didn't really know how to navigate relationships and boyfriends and all that stuff. And I didn't have anyone to really guide me on that either. My parents and I were not open with each other as far as talking about relationships and sex and anything like that. So I felt really on my own and just had maybe one girlfriend that I would talk to about it. And I think that caused me to not really honor myself. I didn't know how to do that or what that even meant. And I feel like I got myself into situations where men didn't value me or honor me because I didn't know how to honor myself. But I think that that's, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of just the teenage girl experience. And what I've come to realize over the years is that I believe it's kind of a karmic curriculum that you sign up for when you incarnate as a woman. This is like your part of your curriculum if you incarnate female. And so that does go way back, but really I was a competitive figure skater, and I left home at 16 and I moved to an international training center in Southern California to work with a specific coach who I trained with one summer, and he got such great results out of me, like his technique, and we had great rapport. And so I was really skating well with him, and my family and I made the executive decision to relocate me to train full time, like homeschool for the last 2 years of high school, and really just like dive deep into my skating. And so I built this really great friendship with my coach. He was also trying, you know, there to kind of take care of me and watch over me. And after about, I think it was maybe like 8 months after I had moved there and relocated, he crossed the line physically and sexually with me. And the first time it happened, he asked me, "Do you like that?" And I said, I couldn't even speak. I was so in shock, but I just shook my head no. And he stopped. But then another opportunity came and happened where he got me like into his room and pulled me into his bed and did things that I was not comfortable with, that I was not ready for, and made me think or feel like, one, I couldn't say anything, two, that it was okay, and it was, quote, legal, even though technically it wasn't. I was 17, he was 26. And, you know, that just sort of was the beginning of the blurred lines of our relationship as coach and student. And it was a really tricky dynamic to navigate, because up until that moment, as coach and student, every day he's telling me what to do, and I would do it on the ice. And so then here I was in this very vulnerable situation with a senior, a superior, someone I look up to and admire even, and someone that I had, you know, kind of had a little crush on, as far as like, here's this Olympic athlete and who's charismatic and is interested in me too. You know, there's also that gets kicked up as a 17-year-old. So it was very tricky to navigate. And ultimately he ended up, you know, really making me feel special and chosen. And that pulled me into this deeper relationship with him, beyond coach and student. And it was just so messy, and it was like secretive, and he had a girlfriend the whole time that lived in another country, and it went on for a little over 4 years until there was a breaking point. His girlfriend had actually moved to the States, and they were living together, and I came to the rink one day and I saw a ring on her finger, and he had proposed to her, but he was still trying to be with me, and he didn't even tell me he was planning to do that. And I was just so angry, and I was like, are you engaged? Like, what? You need to tell me this. You know, I don't want to be a part of this love triangle. I mean, I already kind of was, but it was real at that point. It was like, this is real. And she got pregnant, and he was still trying to find ways to be with me. And I was just like, I gotta get out of here. I gotta leave. And so I called my parents, and, you know, they had no idea this was really going on. I think that they had, you know, maybe some little hints or ideas, but they didn't want to really believe it. And, you know, I just told them, like, I have to leave. I want to train with somebody else. I was also dealing with injuries, and there was this intuition in me that felt like maybe some of the pain in my ankle was tied to my coach, and that if I relocated, if I moved away, the pain would go away. I wanted to believe that too. So I relocated and got away. And interestingly enough, I was introduced to Nichiren Buddhism at this time. And that became the practice, the spiritual practice that really has kickstarted my whole consciousness evolution journey. We call it human revolution. And it's, you know, we all have karma in our lives. And what do you do with that? How do you transform it? How do you change it? And so this spiritual practice is centered around that, transforming our karma. And so when I started my spiritual practice and I reflected on these relationships that I had had where I wasn't treated well, and it wasn't just my coach, there were other instances, I just naturally asked myself, like, okay, what is it about me that is attracting these relationships? And the conclusion I came to is that I didn't value my life. If I valued myself, I wouldn't let these men treat me like that. I wouldn't let myself kind of allow myself to be in situations, even when it felt wrong or it felt like I shouldn't be here. I would just kind of kowtow and you know, put my needs and desires and wants aside and make excuses for myself and things like that. So once I realized that, that's really where my journey began to uncover what does it mean to value myself, my life? What do I have, and how do I value myself? What does that look like? What does that mean? And who am I really in relationship to others? And so that experience, this, the whole practice is all about changing poison into medicine. And I really love that because it gives you an opportunity for these awful things that can happen in our lives. We don't have to be a victim of them. We don't have to let that rule us and dominate us and be the reason why we continue to make poor choices in relationships later on in life. We can decide, I'm going to use this opportunity or this lesson, this experience to actually become a better version of myself. So it was about 3 years after I started my spiritual practice and really started believing into and honoring and reaffirming that I am inherently a valuable being, woman. Like I got to the place where one day, I think I was riding my bike and I just realized, like, oh, I have so much to offer. I am an amazing woman, and whomever ends up with me is going to be the luckiest man alive. And like that aha, that realization really felt like it was coming from this deep, grounded place of self-love, not from an egoic place of I'm someone special or, you know, that I'm, yeah, anyone special beyond some, like, another person. It was just my own deep grounded awakening to the beauty of the flower that I am and what I have to offer in a relationship, it just in the world in general. And it was like that really opened the door, I think, for me to meet what I call my cosmic love partner.
I have like full body goosebumps. That story, I think everybody can relate to that in some way of, you know, the blurred lines where growing up, we've been through something where there are blurred lines and we don't listen to our intuition or don't listen to our highest self. And we just kind of stuff it down for whatever reason. And then, as you said, when you came in with this karma or as a woman, and then you turned inward where you said, why am I attracting these relationships, experiences? They are absolutely horrific, terrible. And I'm really sorry that you went through all of that. It's not like anybody deserves that. But as you say in your karmic journey, then you take that poison and then you made the decision to transmute it, transform it into something else, this other path. So I think the blurred lines can be so easy to get to that place where we don't honor ourselves. So when you went on this journey and then you found this Buddhism and kind of got onto that path, what are some of like the biggest ahas or awakenings to yourself that you didn't honor or didn't see before that you think kind of came out of that?
Yeah. So one thing that came up as you were talking was years after I'd gotten out of that relationship, I'm married now. So I think I mentioned earlier that I had this ankle injury that I thought some of my pain was tied to. I sprained my ankle multiple times in my career, in my skating career, about like 3 years into my time at this training center it was a little over 3 years, but I first sprained my ankle and it never healed properly, partially because I never let it heal properly. I always wanted to get back on the ice sooner before I was ready. But years later, after, you know, I'd done a lot of work in my spiritual practice and I'd been married for a few years also, I had this realization that my ankle injury was actually trying to protect me from my coach. And so the body is so deeply intelligent and intuitive beyond our analytical minds. And so I really feel like when there's trauma or, you know, like kind of mental, emotional trauma, if we're not listening, like you said, we don't listen, then the body starts speaking. The body will manifest something for you to remember your body, come back to the body somehow. And sometimes that is in disease or illness or injury where there's pain. And it's like your body is saying like, hey, wake up, there's something here that is not in alignment. And, you know, I was a teenager, so I think I was 19 or 20 at that point. So I didn't have the awareness of that just yet. But I, you know, did eventually awaken to, you know, I think that injury was trying to protect me and keep me away from my coach in some way. And I didn't listen. And so I kept re-injuring it and re-injuring it. And mystically enough, so my husband and I, after we got engaged, we entered this contest, this like nationwide contest to win a dream wedding, like $100,000 dream wedding in Bryant Park on Valentine's Day. And we, you know, got so excited. We went through the whole process of entering and we were finalists. And then it was the day after that we found out we won this wedding. I was in a car accident and I broke that same ankle. And it was like, I just felt like this karma that was in my ankle tied to my coach had to break. It had to just be a clean break. You know, for years it was this sprain. It was just this like strain and this weak point in my body. And then it was like, okay, you want to move forward for real? Like, and it broke.
That is insane. But I completely 1,000% agree. It's like when you don't listen, then your body will, it'll try maybe in little nudges, little whispers, little ways. And when you keep ignoring and ignoring and ignoring, at like your true knowing, then sometimes it is that the injury or the disease or like the thing that you have to stop. Like there's no stuffing it away or pushing it down. Like it will shout from the rooftops if it has. So, wow. The day after you broke your ankle, that is it. That is the clean break. Like, can it be any more clear? I want to get to you actually skating on your wedding day, but not yet, because I want to hear in a minute about what that new experience of skating was like for you now that you broke your ankle and got this dream wedding. But let's back up a little bit, because you dove inward. You found this practice that was the one for you that you needed to go through. And so you had these like muddled relationships, you say, not even this one, but there was more. So you were riding a bike and you're like, I'm the freaking woman. Like I am like, look at me. I'm amazing. As you said, not from an ego place, but like we all are. Like we're these amazing, beautiful beings. And anybody who is in relationship with us, like how lucky. And then hopefully we're both in a place where we're vibrating from this point of attraction where it's like clean, you know, obviously through our whole lives, we're going to grow and evolve and keep, it just keeps unfolding and the uncovering and the shedding happens. But when you can enter into a relationship, when you've done some work with yourself, your point of attraction is different. So you did this work and your story of like meeting your husband, like this dream wedding is insane on its own, but your story of actually just meeting this man who you now call your husband is a whole story in itself. So I know it's 11, 11, 11, like dive into all of that. And once you've changed, like you will hear, once you actually do some work, how your point of attraction changed. I'm sure the audience is just going to love this story.
Thank you. Yeah. First off, I just want to make a statement that if you are a woman, you are a goddess, and you are this divine vessel with the power to harness the love of the universe, and you're gonna give that. You're just naturally gonna give that because you are a woman, and someone out there is the lucky recipient of that love from you. And that's what makes them the luckiest person in the world to be with you. But as far as the story goes, yeah, I had been really working on myself for 3 years in this spiritual practice. And what's so special about this practice is that it's not so self-centered. Like working on yourself is fantastic. It's great. Go do all the things you need to do. Go to all the retreats, do all the journaling, the yoga, like everything. But don't forget that you really grow when you're in relation to others and when you're contributing to others. And so that is a key pillar of the practice. We practice for self and others. And so from the beginning, I was put into a role of leadership where I was taking care of other young women and we were chanting together and dialoguing together and there to encourage each other. So it's a cause-based practice. The mantra we chant is Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. And the word Renge in the mantra is lotus flower. And the lotus is a very unique flower because it is the only flower that bears its seed and blossoms at the same time. So all you think about all the other flowers, the seed is planted, and then over time, it starts to grow, and then it blossoms. But the lotus, it happens simultaneously. And so symbolically, that represents the law of cause and effect, which is a law of the universe, like the law of attraction, the law of, I don't know, there's a bunch of laws I feel on the spot to try to come up with, but law of cause and effect is one of them. And the law of cause and effect states that anything you think, say, or do, which is a cause, has an effect that is immediately dispersed the moment you make the cause. And so when we make good causes, we think good thoughts, positive thoughts, we say good things, positive things, we take good actions, positive actions, contributive actions. Like, those are the effects that we are creating for ourselves in our, it happens simultaneously, but it unfolds in the future. So when we make causes for others as much as we make causes for ourselves, that is like a, that's like a boost to your growth and to your fortune. So I feel like that is a really important piece of the human revolution, or the like self-help, working on yourself piece of the pie. So all of that to say that leading up to meeting my husband that year, I was so convinced I could manifest anything, I could chant for anything and manifest it, that I was chanting for the perfect one bedroom in Santa Monica with a washer and dryer in a safe neighborhood. And I was just like envisioning this one bedroom, and this is my ideal life, this is what I want for myself. And I there were like four or five different opportunities for me to move to LA in 2011, and every single time that opportunity arose, like, something got in the way and it prevented me from going. And I wasn't so married to it either, that I was like, I was closed off to other options. Throughout that year, I got offered to be one of the team skating coaches for the Icelandic figure skating team. And so there was a moment where I was like, oh, I could go to Iceland and teach, like, okay, like, maybe that's what I'm gonna do. And I started chanting for that. And then the volcano exploded and the whole country shut down. So it was like a volcano prevented me from taking that path. listening, got you. And then, you know, I even had a going away party at one point. I was so convinced I was leaving. And then that fell through. And then I had to be like, oh, actually, I'm staying, guys. But then it was like September 2011. And I was like, oh my God, like, if I don't set a date, I'm never leaving. Because it just became this like, okay, go that month, or I'll go that month. 11-11 is one of my lucky numbers. And it was already 2011. I was like, okay, 11-11-11, November 11th, 2011. I don't care what's going on in my life. I'm packing my bags and I'm moving to Los Angeles, because that's what I said I was going to do. And then right before that, I got this opportunity to go to New York City and audition for the Ice Theater of New York. And then I was like, oh my God, I love New York. I'm going to move to New York and do the Ice Theater. Like, this is how my brain works. I'm a four planet Aquarius. I'm very like, ah, that's where I'm going, and this is what's happening. But I still held myself accountable. And I was like, okay, like, even if I go to New York and skate with the Ice Theater, I said I was moving to LA on 11-11-11, so I'm doing that. And I had 3 days between the time when I got home from that trip to the 11th, and I was like, all right, packing my bags, going. And I arrived in LA. I took my time getting there, and so I didn't arrive in LA until the 13th, but I you know, I drove to this home. There was this family that I knew in Santa Monica with a guest house, and I had asked the mom via email if it was okay that I stay there and get my feet on the ground and find a place, and she said yes. So the day that I arrived, I knocked on the door and I was like, hi, thank you so much for letting me stay. You know, I'm really hoping that I'll find a place within, you know, the next 1 to 3 months at the most. I'm happy to pay rent. And the husband just looked at me like I was from Mars. And he was like, you can stay for 2 weeks, but after that, we're renting it out. And I was like, oh, okay. Thank you so much. awkward. And like, what just happened? So their guest house was across the street. So I like ran across the street and I unpacked my Buddhist altar and I set it up. I didn't know what else to do, but to just chant. And I took that one bedroom that I'd been chanting for and like, this is my ideal vision of perfection. And I threw it out the window and I was just like, I just want to find the best place for me, whatever that is. Like, I don't care anymore. I don't care if it's a roommate or a sublet or a one bedroom, like whatever it is, I give up. Like, I just want it to be the best thing for me. And then 2 days later, I came across a Craigslist ad and it was really great. There were no spelling errors and it was maybe one, but perfect grammar, which was really rare in a Craigslist ad, and beautiful pictures, and it was hand signed. Andre. And so I call the phone number, I leave a message, we make arrangements for me to come see the place the next day. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is a really handsome young man renting out a room in his apartment. And I like could feel the heat already. And he showed me the place and we sat down and talked and discovered that he's Buddhist also. And we both love snow sports and just had all these things in common. And we continued to text even after I left, but he had appointments to show the place all week. But he texted me a couple hours later and he's like, you know what? I have a good feeling about you. Do you want to just meet with the landlord and fill out an application? And I said, sure. So the following day I did that and found out that I qualified. And so we decided to go out and celebrate that I'm moving in and get to know each other better. And we now consider that like our real first date. We shut the bar down. They kicked us out. Like we're continued to talk on the street. We just could not like say goodbye. And then there was a couple weeks before I physically actually moved into the place. And we just built this little friendship. We were like, we're going to be roomies. Like, let's be friends. And by the time I moved in, I definitely had a little crush on my roommate, but I was like, okay, you know, like I feel this, but I'm going to be cool and respectful and give it a couple months. And if he doesn't make a move in 2 months, I'm going to make a move. But I didn't have to wait 2 months because he actually made a move on the second night that we were living together. And this is part of what I talk about in my book too, is that was different this time for me, is I had told myself, okay, the next person that I'm really interested in and have feelings for, I'm going to tell them right up front, like what it is that I want, not necessarily with them, but just what I want in my life. And so the moment he kissed me, I said, what are we doing? I just signed a 6-month lease. And look, I'm at a point in my life where I want a relationship. And if you don't want that, that's fine, but we need to stop right now. And I said, I think we're good enough friends. We can laugh this off. Like, I just, I'll go back, I'll go to my room and we'll like laugh about this tomorrow. And we ended up talking for a couple hours about like, where are you in your life? And where am I in my life? Are you ready for a relationship? All that kind of stuff. And then he just at one point like grabbed me and kissed me really hard. And he said, yes, make this work. And so that was it. A week later, I came home. He'd written in rose petals on my bed, will you be my girlfriend? 3 weeks after that, it was New Year's Eve, and we were at a concert and a rave, and at midnight he told me he loved me, and I was like, I love you too. And we literally felt this, we call it to this day a love splosion, but this like love splosion went off on the dance floor that night. And it created this energetic force field around us where we had like a bubble, literally a bubble. People couldn't penetrate this 5 foot radius space around us. And meanwhile, the entire dance floor is shoulder to shoulder. And that was like the supernova or the quasar that went off in the universe. But it was the following day when the effects of that really hit me, and I burst into sobbing, blubbering tears for 8 hours straight, like the kind where you can't even catch your breath, you know, like for 8 hours. And through that purge, like, I don't think I'd ever really experienced tears of joy until that point in my life. But the floodgates just broke through, and it was this, it was simultaneously sorrowful tears, but also like these immense tears of joy. And it was this mantra that just kept repeating, I can't believe I found you again. I can't believe I found you again. And it was like I was seeing visions of our souls out in the cosmos reuniting, and the tears of sorrow were these like lifetimes that we were apart, and the tears of joy were the tears stemming from like, we did it, we found each other again, like. And he just held me the entire time, no questions asked, just allowed me to be this emotional wreck the day after we had fallen in love. And so for me, that whole experience was just this initiation into the immense power of love and the curriculum of love that I feel like I've been asked to sit in and process and learn from and now teach.
Wow, that is so special. Like when you talked about that aura around you, it's like I could feel that nothing could get in to like this love that just surrounded the two of you together. It's just so incredible. So what was it, like the question that popped up as you're talking about this story to LA, what was it that like drove you to LA? Like you said, you tried to get there so many times. What was the pull there?
So when I had to come to terms with the end of my figure skating career, because the injuries were just, they were to the point, and I was aging out of the competitive world, that I had to really say, okay, like I can no longer compete figure skating. So what do I do with myself? And interestingly enough, it's at that time when the Buddhism came into my life. And I also started a martial arts practice. I was a Muay Thai fighter. And I think that I didn't know it at the time, but now looking back, like my spirit had a lot of anger to process. And so that's why it felt so good for me to just like become this punching, kicking machine, because it was like I had to get this anger out of my body. And so I did that for a couple of years really intensely. And but the Buddhism really made me shift out of being a fighter into a lover. But at that time also, I started taking acting classes, and I'd done like drama in middle school, and I loved being in plays and performing. And so then I started taking acting classes, and it was like, oh, this is just like skating, but it doesn't hurt my ankle. Going to class was like going to practice, and working on a scene was like working on my program, and going to an audition was like going to competition, and the judges were like the casting directors. And so it was just this seamless transition and flow for me to fall into acting. And I was living in Salt Lake City at the time. There's a really great little acting hub there, and a lot of films and projects happening. But ultimately I knew, like, okay, I'm felt like this hamster on a wheel, not going anywhere. So I moved back home to Idaho for a couple years to just like figure myself out in my life. And then that's when I decided, okay, I need to move to LA if I really want to pursue acting. So it was that career and pull that drove me to Los Angeles.
Okay. And thank goodness, because yeah, here you are, you're married, you found your cosmic love partner. And so we kind of
the second day that I was in LA.
Second day, like, what is even happening here? I don't know, just the stars aligned so perfectly to connect you at the right moment in time, because had you met him previously, maybe you wouldn't have been that match. So it's like through everything, this journey, these challenges, these hurdles, this healing, it was like, this was the moment, this was the time where you two were supposed to connect again and cross paths. And so 2 days later, you have this aura around you. You've like, you're in love, you found your partner. And then this experience of this dream wedding, I watched The Knot. I watched it and I'm just like in awe here. So you won a $100,000 wedding. And the cool kind of crazy thing about it is you didn't get to pick. Like, you had a few options of dresses, but then the audience picked your dress. They picked all of the things. So what the heck, like, was that whole experience like to get married on Valentine's? And then I want you to talk about, like, you broke your ankle, clean break. It's a year later, however long it is. I don't even know a year.
No, it was 30 days after my ankle broke that I had to skate on my wedding day.
You, oh my God.
33 days.
Okay. So tell us all the things. This is insane.
I know, it's insane. Yeah. So the day after we found out we won the wedding, I was in this car accident, my ankle broke. And the like you're talking about, the just like mind-blowing thing about having won this, beyond just having won this wedding, but the venue was Bryant Park in the winter, and they have an ice skating rink. And so I asked, you know, could I give a skating performance at our wedding? And they were like, we'll see what we can do. And so they made it happen where I was going to get to give a skating performance. But here I was with this broken ankle. I actually didn't know it was broken. You know, I just knew I was in this car accident. And I went to the doc. I was, you know, the emergency room. And then I went to an orthopedic specialist, ankle specialist. And he looked at my x-rays and he was like, oh yeah, you got a sprain, you know, here's a air cast. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I'd sprained my ankle like 8 times. I know what a sprained ankle feels like. This was a little bit, felt worse than that, but I trusted him. He's looking at the x-ray. He's like, just take some Advil and here you go. And so And actually, interestingly enough, I had to compete in a beauty pageant 2 weeks after the car accident, where I was on stage walking in heels. And I, just smiled and gritted through it. But I think just the, our minds are so powerful and so believing in and thinking that it was truly a sprain allowed me to get through that. And then same thing with skating on my wedding day. Like obviously I didn't get to skate, or I was choreographing what I was gonna do on my wedding day just in my mind. I didn't even get to get on the ice and try it out or anything until the day before the wedding was the first time I got on the ice actually with my sprained ankle, is what I thought it was sprained. Popped probably like four Advil before that happened, but went out there and I just sort of choreographed something that was mostly on my left foot, skating mostly on my left foot so that I wasn't doing anything painful on my right. Obviously, I couldn't jump. I could do some spins, but that was another little test for my ego, because as a skater, you want to show off all your amazing tricks. Look at the double jumps I can do and the split jumps I can do and how, but here I was really being asked to harness the love that I have for Andre and the love that I have for skating and put it into the energy that I perform rather than the tricks that I perform. So, yeah, I got to give a skating performance at our wedding, which honestly was the highlight of my entire figure skating career. And we'll forever go down in my memory bank history as like one of the most magical moments of my life.
Yeah, so magical. Like you get to kind of come full circle, and that through your love, like when do you ever get to have a performance, you performing on your wedding day, the thing that you love to do or grew up to do that performance for you and your husband? So.
Yeah, and it just felt like I had there was my friend's mom is an intuitive guide, and she said that we were meant to have that wedding lifetimes ago, and it didn't happen in a past life, and so that's why it happened in this life. And I really like my body really believes that.
Wow. So through all of this, your journey with love, you're at this point, you've wrote this amazing book, How to Attract Your Cosmic Love Partner. You do love coaching. Why is this so? I mean, I really don't even have to ask the question because you've like basically spilled out all your love and your story, but why is it so? I guess I'll just ask it again. So important, or the thing that is like coming through you right now to help other people get to this most magical place where love just kind of pulsates and vibrates through you and out of you and in relationships.
Oh, thank you so much for asking that question. It's important to me because I look at our world, and I don't even have to look at it, I can feel it. But there's two forces that dominate or govern our world and govern our lives, and it's love and fear. And we are inundated with things that are keeping us tied to our fearful selves and fueling fear in our lives. I mean, you just take 10 minutes to watch the news, and you're gonna be sucked into this vortex of fear that makes you think the world is not a safe place. I'm not safe. Everybody is out to get me. The world is crumbling. And I'm not denying that that's happening. That's happening because we are obsessed with it. We're fueling it, and we're living it. And when we as individuals live in fear, we are contributing to the fear in the collective. And so it's important to me, this book, because it's all about how to live in the energy of love, how to cultivate more love into your life, how to give more love, be in love. And it's the process of doing that that's going to bring love to you. And love, there's many different types of love, which I talk about in my book. I think there's 7 different types of love. And so we can harness the energy of love in many different ways, through friendship, through spiritual practice, through romantic love, through self-love, and creating a practice of tuning into love versus tuning into fear. That's going to grow within you. And then that's the energetic contribution you're making to the world, to the collective. And so it's just become so vital to me, so important, that I've really kind of put my acting career on the side, because I love acting. I've feels like I said, it was like skating but didn't hurt my ankle. It filled that void. But I'm just feeling so called that, like, I need to help bring more love into the world right now. We're at like a crisis point. I don't mean to laugh at that, but it's true. And anything I can do or be or teach and share that's going to assist that for humanity, it's like, I'm here, I'm listening, I'm showing up. Where do you need me? So
yeah, wow. I love all of that. I totally agree. When COVID happened, one thing that came into my mind is like, what if as a collective, we all took this time to grow 1%? We only grew 1%. Can you imagine the difference, the energy in the world? So with you here as a conduit of love to help people actually tune in and let go of some of the darkness and be love and receive love and to give the love, then it will make this world and our experience and the experience of everybody else that's around us this more vibrant, beautiful, joyful experience. And isn't that really where we want to get to, through all the ups and downs and the hurdles, to still have that like peace of just like, just love feels like peace to have that along the journey, taking it with you in whatever you go through. So
yeah.
Where can everybody get a copy of your book, contact you to work with you, get to see all of the different things? I know we like briefly touched on the knot, but you got to go check out the wedding. And you also have like some volunteer experience that you've done, this cool trip, you and your husband. So where can people find out all the things about you and connect with you to maybe find some more love in themselves and their life?
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to real quick say, like, what you just said gave me chills, and that this book actually came to me during COVID. And it was like, this is the time, you need to do this. And this idea of like being love, or like cultivating, calling in so much love, it can feel really big and daunting, or self-love, you know, like, so I just want to share a small step that people can start to take right now, and it's to think of just one thing that you love effortlessly. It might be an animal, it might be flowers or trees or gardening or your brother or sister, like just, or your daughter or your son, like what's one thing that it's just effortless for you to love? And start there. Just pour so much love into that one thing because it's so easy and it's just going to snowball and overflow. You can even visualize this being as a vessel. And every time you give it love, you're just like filling the vessel. And by practicing giving love to some one thing that's easy and effortless, you're gonna start to make it possible for you to love other things. And it just becomes kind of an avalanche from there. And my experience is that you can cultivate a love that is as big as the universe itself through the act of loving just one thing. So take that, take it and go. And then where you can find me and the book, How to Attract Your Cosmic Love Partner, is on Amazon. And I am on Instagram at Sierra Sophia Mercier. If you would like a hand-signed, personalized copy, you can DM me on Instagram. Happy to mail you a copy. And yes, on YouTube, if you go to youtube.com/loveSetRun, that is the travel series that my husband and I created where we backpacked around the world and we did volunteer work in all the different countries that we visited. And our mission with that was really to just inspire people to make their travels altruistic. And it's really just that piece that I was talking about earlier, where you live, you practice, you exist for yourself and for others. And so everywhere you go, you can be a contribution to others. So we just show you different ways that you can get involved abroad. You know, if you have the luxury and ability to travel the world, why not get to know other cultures and organizations and causes and just really immerse yourself in the local life? And so I'm really proud of that series. We have two seasons. The first season is what I just talked about. And the second season is our trip to French Polynesia, where we swam with humpback whales and created what I like to call a conscious conception ceremony, which is we consciously called in a soul to join our family to make the world a better place. And I think that is actually what my next book is about. But you know, like cultivate this cosmic love. And then the next step is to call in your cosmic family. So there's a lot there to explore, and I'm accessible, I'm available, and I'm here to be a conduit for love.
Absolutely beautiful. Thank you for sharing your love with me today. And I can't wait to share you with my audience around the world, because yes, what does the world need? A little bit more love. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you again. I loved our conversation.
Thank you so much, Candace. I loved it too.
Thank you for joining me on today's episode of All Things Relatable. If you know someone that would relate to this episode and get value from it, please pass it along. Also, if this episode resonated with you, I would love for you to rate, review, and subscribe.